This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The independent autopsy on Nolan Wells came back undetermined. The pathologist listed seven questions he still can't answer and said he cannot rule out foul play. The DA committed to presenting this to a grand jury once the investigation is complete. But what does that grand jury and what that grand jury actually receives depends on decisions being made right now. That's what we're going to be getting into today. Your thoughts in the comment section and Substack and YouTube. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, with us as always. And joining us, from what we understand, I'm not making this up, this sounds like something I would pull out of my ass, Jennifer Coffendaffer is joining us from a train in Czechoslovakia. That's a new one. Never thought I'd have that. Jen, welcome. We don't have a visual on her today, but we have her audio if you're watching us on YouTube to talk about this case. So well, I'm just going to jump into the case. What is going on in the investigation right now behind the scenes as they prepare to present this information to a grand jury? I want to take, you know, opinion out of this, not whether we think anything happened, foul play or not, but if they're preparing information to present to a grand jury, what are they putting together right now, and how long might it take to get that to a grand jury and for an investigation to take once it's handed off? Jen, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think this is going to take quite a while, and I'll tell you why. It's because they're going to want to go through all the digital information from his phone and from all the friends' phone. We found out that there were about 30 friends that actually went on three separate boats. Well, that's a lot of people to go ahead and get that information about, not to mention all of the witnesses. That's going to include more than just the buddies. That's also going to include everyone potentially that was on that beach. So I see this taking quite a while, and this should all be presented to the grand jury with, of course, the GPS information, the autopsy information. Those are the big ticket items.
The grand jury has subpoena power. Obviously, investigators have so much power, too. But what sort of powers does the grand jury have in this case that maybe investigators don't have yet? Is the investigation going to get so far and then start relying on the powers of the grand jury that may go beyond the scope of what they're able to do right now?
Well, no. The grand jury won't have any more powers than the investigators have, but they're dual powers. In other words, you can issue subpoenas through the grand jury, and you can also do subpoenas and get information through warrants and things like that. So you're able to get the same information. It's just through a different avenue.
Is one more difficult to exercise than the other as far as an investigator going to a court, getting a subpoena versus a grand jury requesting it because they're the grand jury and it's they want it, they get it, basically? I'm just wondering if the lever is easier to pull in one direction or the other when people are trying to dig, especially if you have reluctant witnesses. And again, not to say anything criminal, but because of the way that this case has been going and people not wanting to have their name, you know, in the mix of all the minutiae here and the very high emotions that are flying.
The lever is much easier to pull when it comes to a grand jury subpoena. Mm-hmm. That is a piece of cake comparatively. It's much quicker than, say, a warrant. Mm-hmm. So it is a strong investigative body that has quicker powers to utilize. So that's another reason that a grand jury is a good course of action in this case.
And Jen, how soon do you think, or the speed of moving from a grand jury to the investigation would it go? Because, I mean, I think there's enough here, both with public sentiment and inaccuracies and just the typically way these things work, that it should move away from the grand jury at some point. I mean, I haven't worked with grand juries on my counterintelligence side. How fast does that process happen?
Well, I think this is going to be a slow one, and I'll tell you why. It's likely that they'll put these witnesses before the grand jury. They don't have to do it that way. they could have the detective that interviews them come and deliver the totality of what each witness had to say. However, consider this. These grand jurors are like having 15 to 24, I believe it is, in Mississippi, super sleuths sitting there. Not all of them, but they're going to be very inquisitive. They're going to want to do a good job. And it's terrible. It's like having 24 defense attorneys coming at you. So if they want to hear from these witnesses, they're going to be able to do that. Can you imagine how long that's going to make the process?
Yeah. And in the cases you've worked in the past, how long does that process take from, well, typically, do they really need that many people to say that something's a little off? Or are they going to want to interview everyone? In other words, because I know, like, when in my investigations, when we were working them in the Bureau, you know, it wasn't a huge high bar for me to move from a preliminary investigation into a full investigation. So I'm kind of, is it the same thing here? Is it kind of the grand jury is kind of like a PI, a preliminary investigation before the full, or is it something different?
Well, it's a full right now, definitely a full in terms of how it's being constructed and put together. The question that I think you're definitely trying to get to is how long in the world is this going to take? And a lot of it is going to depend on that grand jury, what they are satisfied with in terms of the evidence. If they don't believe that the detective, as an example, is presenting the witness statements to their satisfaction, they're going to want to hear possibly from some of those witnesses. So it just depends on what they want.
And is that what the grand jurors themselves are going to be requesting, or is that what the attorneys are going to want, or the judge that's overseeing it?
Well, so the prosecutor and the clerk, they're the only people in there other than the witness and the grand jurors. So okay. A judge won't have any idea what's going on in this case. It will just be those individuals. And the prosecutor has an idea of how he wants to present this to the grand jurors. And he can present it as it comes in. That's what my experience has been. In other words, if you have a return of a subpoena, you don't wait around. You return it right when you get the, what we call a subpoena return. Mm-hmm. So if they do it like that, it should be going along as we speak. In other words, it's piecemealed in. And then ultimately, the prosecutor will ask, listen, I want you to consider this for whether there are charges that should be levied or whether they're not. And that's when you're looking at whether a true bill or a no bill would be returned or a nothing bill. A lot of people think that you always have a true or a nothing bill, but sometimes it just goes before the grand jury and there's nothing there, so the prosecutor doesn't have anybody to ask for probable cause against. That's the third area that is seldom discussed.
So basically, it's the entire thing is determined by the prosecutor. He's the one that's going to be, he or she's going to be the one listening to the grand jurors and listening to the evidence that they're presenting. So they're going to be the ones making the final call?
No, the grand jurors make the final call. The prosecutor strictly decides who he's going to put on and so forth, but the grand jurors can ask. In other words, we need to hear from this witness, or what about this phone, or this wasn't enough, why didn't you go back further, or whatever the case may be, and then the prosecutor has to go back and get that from the detective.
Thanks for explaining that.
Let me ask you this, because we've been talking about people having reasons to not want to cooperate at this moment in time, or maybe just holding back their cell phones from being examined. Not because there's anything to hide on there in terms of anything that happened to Nolan Wells, but because they're 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, some 21-year-old people who may be involved in activities that are not necessarily legal. Per se, drinking, drugs, who knows what else, and conversations that may be not wanting to have someone else to see, or somebody doesn't want their pictures being seen on their phone by investigators. There's a lot of individual reasons why a lot of people may not want to give their phones over to authorities to investigate. Obviously, if you're a friend here, you want the truth to come out, but people have their individual reasons of not wanting to be caught at whatever they're doing. If if their phones are subpoenaed, what sort of fear, if any, is grounded in those folks of giving their phones over? Would investigators have any leverage to look at other things on those devices and go after them for completely unrelated charges just because they caught it on their phone? Or if when they're giving their devices over for investigation, are they limited to strictly finding information related to Nolan Wells' disappearance?
No, the answer is no. And I'll tell you, I just asked Mr. Proctor about that.
True.
I'm referring to the Karen Reed case. Yeah. And I only bring that up because I'm very serious that when you have an investigation like this, and if something else comes out, in other words, you're the biggest drug dealer in the county, they can act on that because they had the authority to look at that phone.
Yeah. So, I mean, but I mean, I guess so you're playing the odds there. I mean, if you're the biggest drug dealer in the county, yeah, they could probably come down to you. But if you're if it's just, I mean, I guess there really is no bar. It's all a gray area. If there is a picture of you drinking and you're underage, if there's a picture of you smoking weed or something, I don't know if it's legal in Mississippi or whatever the hell someone might be doing that may fall under illegal terms. Would they really be going after people for that sort of thing, do you think? I mean, it's a you think question. And if you're the kid, I don't know that you're willing to roll the dice there if you know damn well, you know, you don't have anything that's of criminal nature regarding Nolan Wells on there. But maybe you got a video of him on the island and you don't even know it. I mean, that's some dice that they may have some issues with being rolled.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. That's why these things are very sticky, Tony, because when you look at it, people want their privacy protected.
Yeah.
They do not want to have to give up information that could possibly incriminate them for something, you know, that has nothing to do with this case. So I think it'll be very interesting to see the full breadth of what people even want. In terms of how many people, is it the 30 people? I mean, at what point do you stop going after people's phones? And the prosecutor and the grand jurors have a huge task here not to get outside of their lane of what's reasonable to ask for.
Yeah, because that was my question, Jen, is like, you know, when we're doing over here is we talked about this on a show not too long ago where you and I talked about the minimization, because if it's not relevant to the case you're investigating, you can't listen to it, or it's not relevant to anything that the case, basically. Right. And so in this instance, even if they're overhearing other potential criminal activities, you know, or suspected criminal activities, whether it's alcohol drinking or drug use or something like that, isn't it? I know you're saying, because again, I'm trying to understand this grand jury process, because again, we didn't deal with it when recruiting spies. Doesn't the prosecutor themselves, so aren't they the ones making the call on what they're going to actually prosecute or not prosecute? So even if the grand jury found something here, it's still up to the prosecutor whether they're going to move forward with it, yes or no?
100%.
Right.
It's totally up to them, and they're going to truly understand the parameters here in terms of what they're really looking at. What they're looking at is this case. Does anybody have information that could incriminate somebody in the death of Nolan Wells? That's what everybody wants to know. And so if in that process, though, you find something that is criminal in nature, it's open. It's open for discussion. So the prosecutor, you just hope, makes a reasonable call when it comes to all the information they could potentially be seeing.
Right. Is it worth it? Is it something that's ever done by a prosecutor to say, look, we don't care about you smoking weed or drinking on your phone if you're like whatever. I mean, if there's something beyond that, if you got like whatever that goes, you know, beyond this bar, we're probably going to catch it. But I mean, is it worth saying, look, we're not going to be going after anybody for these sort of things. We need information about what happened to Nolan. We don't care if, you know, you got a Malibu and Coke and there's a picture of it. Is that something that's ever done, or is that just creating way too gray of an area that legally would be a mess?
It's gray. It's really gray, and legally I think would be a mess. And And sometimes, and I'm not kidding, I'm bringing this up because this is something that many people know about, is you can expose a bigot. You can expose an anti-Semite. You
yeah.
could see inwards. I mean, imagine the potential of yeah. all of this and why like, people are going to be concerned. But what they need to do with the subpoenas is be very limiting. In other words, just subpoenas that have to do with, or subpoena information that has to do with what happened July 4th. Mm-hmm. Say it's 6 a.m. or maybe the night before, maybe you give it the 3rd to the 4th, and then that's it. And you limit just that information that gets turned over. And that, you know, by doing that, I think you really set a proper limit and a limit that's going to be approved.
I want to ask you one more thing on this case. Obviously, the independent autopsy, that information has come out this week. We still don't know about what came out of the state's autopsy. That's still behind closed doors as of our recording here. The state retained Nolan Wells' throat, trachea, hyoid bone, part of the lingual cartilage during the first autopsy. The independent pathologist says that is standard when there's concern about compression. So 19 days later, the state hasn't released what they have found. Is that info waiting for a grand jury for further testing or their evaluation, or is it going to be released to the public? What's your take on the fact that that is still being held back and we don't have an answer on it as of this moment? Is it anything, because I don't know, is it of any concern, or is it just part of the process which is going to take some time?
It's part of the process that's going to take time. And I can tell you, they were really smart with this grand jury move, because not all cases get a grand jury, right? They don't decide to utilize the grand jury, and they have here. And in doing that, they don't even have to ask for any gag orders or anything, because they know that they aren't going to release anything to the public before it's going to be seen before the grand jury. Mm-hmm. So you see this kind of cushion that they have in between them to isolate all this information from the public. It's going to go to the grand jury first. And until the grand jury receives it and has a chance to digest it and make some sort of conclusions, I don't think we're going to get anything more from the prosecution.
Yeah, I saw that this morning on the research I was doing, was that, nothing from the autopsies from the government is going to be released prior to the grand jury. It's going straight to the grand jury, like you said, Jen. And also, generally, no, the prosecutor is very unlikely to pursue minor unrelated offenses like underage drinking or anything like that, because they're going to be very specific with the grand jury's instructions.
Very unlikely, but if you're the teenager and you got a scholarship or you got whatever, and that could ruin your next.
Oh, yeah. Fear is always a great motivator.
I mean, I don't know that, I mean, maybe is inspiring enough to get someone to hand over things without a subpoena. I don't know. I mean, to each their own, probably depending on what's all in there. But, I mean, hell, even if you don't have anything, you know, so you don't want to, like, even be included in a circle where somebody might think there is. So hopefully they're able to get the information they need and get the answers that are wanted, wherever this may lead. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we continue to follow this case. We will continue to follow it wherever it may lead.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
So many questions in this case, still not a lot of answers. And at the end of the day, we still don't know. We still don't know a lot in the Nolan Wells situation, case, death, whatever happened. I want you to know that going into this discussion, and I welcome you to participate in this. This is not just me talking at you. This is us having a conversation. So I do welcome you giving your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube as we go through this. We will continue our conversation right there. Let's start at the top. There's a video. If you'd follow this case at all, you have probably seen it. A group of young people on a beach, phones up, somebody screaming, the audio blown out, and it's hard to follow. An enormous number of people have watched that clip, believing they were watching the last recorded moments of Nolan Wells' life. The family's attorney presented it publicly, saying you can hear Nolan asking for his phone back with certainty. The person screaming on that recording says it isn't Nolan. He says it is him. Tristan Shepard, 20 years old, a close friend of Nolan's, told Rolling Stone on July 11th that the voice in the video is his own. He said the argument was between him and a stranger who inserted himself into a disagreement Shepard was having with his girlfriend. He said Nolan isn't in the shot at all. He gave investigators his full statement the day before he went public. He also pointed to one physical detail that makes the identification impossible. That detail goes and does more damage than the screaming actually does. And we'll get to that in a moment. And there's one document in the case that Mississippi law says Nolan's family is entitled to have, not the public, the family. That statute complicates everybody's story, including the ones being told by the people who have been loudest about transparency. Everyone in this story says they want the truth. The fight is over what counts as proof that somebody is hiding it. Nolan Wells was 18. Ocean Springs, Mississippi. He was a wide receiver at Southwest Mississippi Community College, getting ready to go back for the season. And according to attorney Ben Crump, he would have turned 19 in August. On July 4th of 26, he rode out from a private dock near Ocean Springs to Horn Island with friends. Horn Island is a federally protected barrier island roughly 10 miles offshore. No facilities, no roads. You get there by boat or you don't get there at all. Jackson County Sheriff John Ledbetter told ABC News the group came back without Nolan. And that, from what investigators understood, he chose to stay behind. His mother, Christine Wansley, reported him missing around midnight going into July 5th. The United States Park Ranger found his body in the water off the island's northwest tip on the morning of July 6th. Warren Hudson, one of the friends on that trip, described the scene during the July 21st podcast appearance. Thousands of people, boats anchored for miles around the island, the most popular day of the year to be out on the water. Thousands of people on that sand, the boat that brought Nolan out, pulled away at 4:31 in the afternoon, taking on water, and he wasn't on it. On July 27th, 2026, TMZ reported that sources with direct knowledge of the investigation say authorities have evidence placing Nolan on the island after the boat left. And per that reporting, at least two witnesses interviewed by law enforcement say they saw him there after it headed back. Those sources are anonymous, and the sheriff's office has not confirmed it. What happened in the hours after 4:31 is the thing nobody has established. The argument that something is being buried deserves to be built as strong as it can be built, because it's not a stupid argument, and the people making it aren't stupid people. The state autopsy was completed on July 7th, according to sources. It hasn't been released. 16 days later, District Attorney Angel Myers confirmed it stays sealed until a grand jury reviews it. The family got their own, funded by Colin Kaepernick. Crump announced those results on July 22nd at the NAACP National Convention in Chicago. Cause and manner of death, undetermined. Dr. Roger Mitchell reported no fractures and no deep tissue injuries. He described a red discoloration at the back of the skull as inconclusive and worth further investigation. Mitchell's report says the throat didn't arrive with the body. The trachea, the larynx cartilage, the thyroid horn, and hyoid bone. He wrote that retaining anterior neck structures during an initial autopsy is common forensic practice, and it's been reported that pathologists do it when there is concern about the neck. It's not conspiracy that it was held back. It's for further evaluation. Now, look, I know we can go into conversation there. Well, look who's holding it back. Why are they holding it back? Can we trust them to hold it back? Excuse me, allergy season. And I hear you. And that's why questions need to be asked. And that's why everybody's still talking about this and holding any power that is in this story accountable. There are gazillions of eyes on this shit. There are. So consider that a boon to the investigation and to accuracy and to truth coming out. This isn't something where it's being shoved under the rug and nobody's talking about it. There is so much attention here. And trust me, the investigators know it. If something starts to look off or shady, look, even things that are not off and not shady are being questioned as, is this off? Is this shady? When they're not. And that's the important thing with this story and why it is so important not to have a preconceived notion going into it. It's important not to go into this thing thinking everything's hunky-dory. Of course, the investigation will be pure and flawless and there'll be nothing wrong and everything will be by the letter of the law. I'm not going into it that way. It's also important not to go into it going, every person is conspiring and all of his friends somehow secretly hated him. And the moment they got on a boat on the 4th of July, they decided to off their friend. And this is somehow some sort of racially charged murder against what otherwise has a 1,000% track record of friends who love him, who care about him, who've had strong relations with him throughout his lifetime without racial tension or that being even a subject of conversation. He didn't get on the Klan boat with his friends. His friends weren't Klan members. It wasn't anything of the sort. So it's important not to go down that road immediately either. And it's important to take in the evidence as it comes in and accept it for what it is. But ask questions. Ask questions, but questions do have answers. And once an answer is given in a solid fashion and it's just indisputable, it doesn't matter what color you are, who gave it, where you're from, anything. When it's just, here's the answer, at some point you have to go, here's the answer. Not everything is conjecture. Not everything is open to someone's individual truth. There are facts. There is truth. And that should be the goal of everyone. Not trying to incite something here or there or insinuate even that there's something else awry or insinuate that everything is A-okay when we don't know that it is yet. That seems to be the biggest problem with this case. Everyone's insinuating that they think they know what happened. Well, you don't. I don't. You don't. No one does. The person who does is dead. And if there's more information to be had, well, by God, there's a lot of ways it will come about, but patience is going to be key. The pathologist cannot rule out injury to the neck as a contributor or cause of death. His report also lists the biggest limitation in his own work. This is the guy who did the second autopsy, and he can't rule it out, not because it's there, not because that's what happened, because he didn't have the apparatus to say, this is what happened. He didn't have the material. It's like saying, here's Robin's book. We talk about it all the time on the show, okay? If I did not have this book, I couldn't leave a review for this book. I couldn't tell you anything about this book. I couldn't tell you if it's good, if it's bad, if it's anything. Because I hadn't read it. I hadn't looked at it. If I didn't have it. Doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Doesn't mean there's not anything in here that will tell us information. It means I don't have it. So to look at that statement and go, well, Robin never read a book. Or Robin never wrote a book. Robin never didn't say this. No, I didn't have it. if I didn't have this. So I couldn't tell you anything about it if I don't have it. That's exactly what's happening with the second autopsy. He didn't have that part. So he's saying, I can't give you any information, not because it's suspicious, but because I don't have it. That's what that is. And people want to read more into it. Well, it's like, well, no, it's not really. It's just he didn't have that piece to give a judgment on it. Again, and that's not to say that there couldn't be something of question there. But when you don't have it, you can't comment. And lack of information does not mean conspiracy information. It means it doesn't exist. But that space, that empty space where we have a blank spot, it becomes Mad Libs. It becomes people filling in the blank with what they think. That's what our brains naturally want to do. Don't beat yourself up over your brain going that way. It's just how we work. We want answers. We're constantly trying to fill in blanks. And it works against us a lot of the time. So please be careful when you're examining this case and fight the urge to fill in blanks with information that you don't know yet. His report also lists the biggest limitation of his own work. He couldn't directly observe the airway and the lungs for water. It's a big part of this. The one examination that speaks most directly to drowning was the one he wasn't able to perform, and the state holds a report that can. Then there's the family connection. Warren Hudson's mother is Ashley Cole, a chancellery judge in Mississippi's District 16-2. She posted publicly on July 7th, said neither her nor her husband was on the island, said her son was cooperating with police, and said no one in her family was impeding anything. She said she had deactivated her Facebook account. She wrote, "Yes, I am a judge. I also value transparency." A petition asked the Mississippi Commission on Judicial Performance to investigate whether her public comments crossed a line. You can have comments. Everyone is entitled to them. And expressing your thoughts, and yes, you happen to be a judge, maybe there should be a little more thought process on the way that that is observed and the way that that is interpreted. You know, read the room a little bit. Maybe people are going to read you a little bit differently because of your position. It is what it is. It's how people perceive things. You're not a judge in this case. People hear the word judge. Oh, she's a judge in the case. She's going to like, yeah, no, she's not. Not really can't be. Not that type of judge. But does she have her fingers in the legal system? And if she says something aloud to her friends in the legal system, they'll follow along in line because she says it, because her children were out. And hey, my kids were out there and they killed their friend. Everybody go along with my story. We finally got rid of the friend that they all love because of the color of his skin. Now, that's not how that went down. That's just not how that went down. I can probably confidently say that's probably not how that went down. Probably not. But I get it. I get people when you hear like, oh God, one of the friends is a judge or in the system. Could this steer or control this in some way, shape or form? Well, we better make sure that it's known that that is a factor here. But follow the direction of where it's going. Does she demonstrate it? Anything of the sort that she's going down some road or trying to steer something this way or that way? No, she really hasn't. She made a comment on Facebook, just like everyone. So there's that. It's something, again, it's something to be aware of. And then there's the phone. Christine Wansley told Good Morning America that she and her sister went through her son's Snapchat after the phone came back. They found two accounts with nothing in them inside a window when the content, she believes, still should have been there. Again, I get that too. If your son's always on social media, Snapchat, and there's nothing there, and you're like, wait a second, he's missing and there's nothing there. Well, there's also a possible explanation for that, and that the phones are on the boat. And it seems if everybody else's phone seems to line up with that little story, your son would actually be the odd one out if he was filming things. But if everybody else's chats are showing the same thing, and we will get the answer to that through Snapchat, through forensic digital investigation, that's not lost to the ether. It isn't. It will come out. And if it's his phone is consistent with what everybody else's phone was doing, that's not abnormal. as much as you want to make it out to be, or somebody wants to make it out to be, or this or that. Like, it's pure conjecture. If you looked at my phone a couple weeks ago, I was out on the lake. I was swimming in the lake. I went off of a boat. And if you look at my track record on my phone, if I happened to have gone missing, if I was out there in that water, you would look at my phone and go, what's going on here? There's no activity on this phone for like 2 or 3 hours prior to that disappearance. Yeah, because my phone was on the boat because I didn't want to get it wet. I didn't want to lose it in the water. I kind of needed it. But if you look at the track record of everything, of how frequently I'm on my damn phone, which I'm ashamed of, you would go, what's going on here? But then you can explain it going, oh, well, he went in the water. He didn't want to have his phone on him. There you go. Answer solved. But again, it's a blip. It's something you got to look at. You got to ask the question so you're sure. At the funeral on July 20th, Reverend Al Sharpton said local investigators had spoken too early in suggesting no crime was suspected, and he was right on that. NAACP President Derek Johnson said law enforcement appeared to be repeating what other people were saying instead of finding out for themselves. And they got called to task on that, and they clearly aren't saying it anymore. Christine Wansley said the family went to Crump and Sharpton and the NAACP because they weren't getting what they needed locally. That's a real case. It's not a fringe case, and it lands on ground that a different Mississippi sheriff poisoned years ago with one sentence on a Facebook page. Calling this a blackout runs into a problem, though. A blackout produces nothing. This has produced a paper trail you can go read yourself. NBC News obtained the dispatch audio through a public records request. The boat's bilge pump filled. The op failed. The operator called for help. We're going. We're sinking. Can y'all please come? A dispatcher asked whether everyone on the boat was accounted for and is in good health. The caller said, yes, we went through the audio of that. You can watch it on our channel. It ended up being, for me, more of a customer service nightmare than it actually did prove anything evidentiary of note in this case, quite honestly, in my opinion. Your boat's sinking. Can I have your member number? Are you sure you're a member? just listen to it. It's like if your boat's sinking and you're calling this company asking for help, like they didn't really seem all that interested in helping immediately. It felt kind of like, let's make sure they're a paying customer first before we send that boat out to help them while they're sinking, which in itself was, I'd be horrified if that was my company and that's how that was handled. Holy shit. Go listen to it. I mean, just on that note itself, people are welcome to interpret whatever they want out of the background. And there's a lot of people interpreting things out of the background of that phone call. I'm telling you, I've worked with audio since 1996, professionally. Before that, I was working with it on my own computer at home. I've done a thing or two with waveforms and tried to clear things up and hear things, and I understand how the brain works in terms of filling in blanks when you're hearing mumbled, garbled words and you think there's a direction of in which they are speaking. And there's, I'm telling you, a lot of that going on with that audio. Are there moments in that audio that you go, that sounds kind of weird? Yeah. Is there anything that is extremely definitive that I think you could hang your hat on in a court of law? No. At least as of right now. CBS News obtained GPS data from the Mississippi Department of Marine Resources, tracking that boat's movement. CBS also obtained the Marine Resources report itself, which reflects that the boat's owner, his mother, and one other person reportedly with Nolan on July 4th all cooperated. That report ends on July 5th when the Jackson County Sheriff's Office took over as lead agency. Ledbetter confirmed to WLOX on July 16th that the FBI is helping examine digital evidence and explained that the involvement is routine because Horn Island sits on Federal Island and his office works with the FBI often, which is a strange favor to ask of the Bureau if the plan is to keep a lid on things. Investigators publicly asked the crowd from that day to stand to send in original, unedited photos and video, specifically anything showing alleged altercations. That's law enforcement asking the public to hand over the exact material most likely to blow up the version of events they'd been given. A department burying something doesn't necessarily crowdsource the evidence against itself. And look, if the evidence is out there, we're nearly a month into this thing. We are nearly a month into this thing. And you had hundreds of teenagers with devices. Trust me, if somebody had footage of some sort of altercation in some way, shape, or form, I think we would have seen it by now. Not that it went to the police department and died, but it would have come out. In my opinion, I could be 1,000% wrong on that assumption. But groups of people are not good at holding secrets. They're just not. Limiter told the Sun-Herald his people had interviewed roughly 60 witnesses and that the three friends who traveled out with Nolan had been interviewed in depth, none of which means the sheriff has been forthcoming. CNN reported that Ledbetter didn't respond to its questions on a Friday, including the fairly basic one about whether every friend from that trip had been interviewed. The department can hand over a tracking log and still duck a reporter, and this one has done both. And it's just, again, this is why we hold them to account. But also we need to understand that they are not under an obligation to reveal every piece of their investigation to the public upon demand of answer. That's how investigations work. It's how every investigation works, regardless of color, race, creed, ethnicity, anything. They're not. They don't have to do that. It doesn't mean they're hiding anything. It also means they're investigating something. And you don't put information out if you're trying to investigate something. And if you, especially if you're honing in on someone or something, you don't tip your hand and go, oh, yeah, you, by the way, you asked this, by the way, yeah, we think so-and-so might be involved. We're not quite sure yet, but we're going to go and talk to them later today. Why don't you do that? Because if somebody out there that does have some information or knows something and they haven't shared it yet and they have a source or a device or something that could reveal information, they'd rather not tip that person off to destroy it before they find it. That's investigative technique, just kind of 101. Doesn't fill the gap, doesn't fill the void, doesn't answer the question you want answered in that moment in time. And I get it. I hate when I don't get my questions answered. I hate it because I'm very like, I need answers. But it is what it is, and it doesn't show nefarious intent. But hey, the fact that we're noticing this and we're calling this out and going, well, they're not answering those questions, that's good. That means there's eyes on them, which they need. Why? Because Mississippi has a horrific history in this department. But the simple act of, we're not going to tell you every detail of what's going on in our investigation, doesn't mean jack. It doesn't. We are following this wherever it goes, trust me. The friends aren't quiet either. Shepard talked to Rolling Stone and to ABC News. Javon Williams talked to TMZ. Hudson sat for a podcast interview. Shepard said he's been in communication with Nolan's family's authorities, have said the teenagers on the trip cooperated. And they have done so publicly. Warren Hudson told Brandon Tatum he begged Nolan repeatedly to get on the boat as the group pulled out. That account is his, and other people who were out there have described that afternoon differently. And material keeps reaching this family from outside official channels. Brian Trasher of the United Cajun Navy told TMZ he was in a helicopter roughly 400 feet over Horn Island on July 6. He was shooting wide photographs of the response. He only realized later that Nolan's body was in the frame. He offered the images to the family. Christine Wansley accepted and asked to view them in person. The people a cover-up would need to keep silent are the ones giving interviews. So back to that video. And the detail Shepard pointed to. He told Rolling Stone the young man everybody has identified as Nolan is too short. Shepard put Nolan at 6'2". CNN has reported his height is 6'1". Take either number and the person in that frame doesn't reach it. It's not him in the video. Sorry. Maybe you should have looked into that a little more in detail, Mr. Crump, before you threw it out into the ether. I know there's plenty of people who are ready to just jump on that shit like a hyena and go, ah, see, regardless of what sort of truth comes out to disprove your claim. But that's why it's important not to release things and make direct comments or assertions about things that you yourself are not entirely sure of. It can come back to bite you in the ass. Or don't you care if it gets enough people on your side of the coin lining your pockets and making people angry and confused? And a family that's trying to mourn their loved one. Overtaken with the information you're putting out there and the pots you're stirring. That look, there's all attention here. I don't know that the pots necessarily need to be stirred. We're watching them. They're cooking. When you cook something on a stove, you don't need to always keep, sometimes you just gotta just let it simmer. Let it simmer, let it cook. If something is going to happen, it's going to happen. And there's every eyeball on it to make sure. You don't throw shit in there just for the hell of it. And say, look, this is what this is. Well, that's not part of the recipe. What are you doing here? Thank God there's advocates for this family, without a doubt. But again, be accurate with the information you're putting out, because not everybody's going to dig as deep as we are or true crimers are. They're going to take your words, and their words have meaning, and they're going to trust you with what you're saying. And I know you probably take advantage of that. People trusting your words. You can just say something and people will simply believe it. But there's a downside to that, too, especially when you incite a lot of people to believe something that's simply not true. I don't know. I want truth. I don't want a narrative. I hope you do, too. It was also a photo that spread as proof Nolan made it off the island alive. Shepard told Rolling Stone it was taken on June 27th, a week before the trip. That was going around. See? Yeah, that's old. Somebody else provided the outlet with metadata from that image and the other photos shot the same night, confirming the date. See how things spread, though? Somebody with some sort of authority just say, see, this is this. Well, if that person's saying it, it must be true. No! We're in an age where everybody has to be their own investigative reporter, unfortunately. Rolling Stone reported that videos taken out of context and images generated by artificial intelligence have also been circulated and attached to this investigation. McLarth urged people to stop passing around false material. The same pattern is running on the emergency call. TMZ ran the audio from the sinking boat through enhancement, and a great many people came away certain that they hear somebody ask whether he's dead. Enhanced audio is not a transcript. It's a processed guess at a degraded signal. And what a listener already believes tends to decide what the listener hears. There's a cost attached to all of it, and the cost is documented. Nolan's friends have been receiving death threats from people who misidentified individuals in that clip. Shepard told ABC News he turned down on-camera interviews because he feared for his safety. Thank you, Mr. Crump. Wasn't that nice of you for putting people's lives at risk unnecessarily? People that Nolan cared about and loved. I'm sure he's looking down, smiling at your antics. Yeah, torture my friends. Especially if they had nothing to do with this. Look, if they did, I get it. But we're not there. And you're in no position to incite people to go after innocent people. You want truth. You want innocent until proven guilty. Then stop acting like people are guilty when you have no evidence of it. Ask questions. Ask for investigations. Don't incite hatred. Don't incite viciousness when there doesn't need to be. Especially after the people that this young man was closest to. That to me is sick. That is weird. It is sick. It is self-serving. It is the opposite of helping a family. Christine Wansley's Nolan's mother, the one person in this with more standing to be suspicious than anybody, posted this on Facebook on July 11th. The internet is unhinged. Well, Christine, there's a reason for that. It's the man that's attached themselves to your family. So a portion of what people are calling suppressed evidence has already been checked, and it didn't hold. It wasn't the sheriff's office that knocked it down. It wasn't Nolan's own. It was Nolan's own friends and a magazine with a fact-checking department who did that. Some of the feeling that facts are being hidden is a feeling of unverified claims, failing verification out in the open. None of that makes the question illegitimate. And nobody who says it does isn't paying attention to where this happened. Again, this is such a hard case because of the history there, because of the shit that goes down and has gone down and still continues to go down in many parts of Mississippi. But again, you have to look at this case and go, is this that? And answer it honestly. And we're still at the point of, I don't know. I don't know. But I can know, and I can see things that are being done inappropriately and with ulterior motives that are not aimed at finding the truth. Snapchat, or rather Sharpton, I don't know why I said Snapchat. Sharpton said it plainly at the funeral. People across the country are looking at this case because they're looking at the history in Mississippi. That's not a rhetorical flourish. It's a citation. And here's what it cites. Rasheem Carter, this wasn't long ago. Rasheem Carter was 25. He went missing on October 2nd of 2022 after telling his mother that white men in trucks were chasing him. His remains were found on November 2nd in woods south of Taylorsville. The next day, the Smith County Sheriff's Department posted that it had no reason to believe foul play was involved. That's the sentence. That's the one. The state medical examiner's office later determined that no cause of death could be reasonably established. The state's medical examiner's office later determined that no cause of death could be reasonably established. Crump called it a modern-day Mississippi lynching. Months later, Sheriff Joel Houston told NBC News he hadn't actually ruled out homicide and told ABC News, nothing is being swept under the rug. There's nothing to hide. A department that had already told the public what to think was suddenly eager to advertise its open mind. Then there's Rankin County. Again, these are not long ago. So this is where you have to have some understanding as to why questions are being asked as heavily they are. But the questions that are being asked and the people who are asking them also have to understand not everything is that, but it is reasonable after you have the reps of Mississippi and what they've done in its existence. To be very hesitant to simply accept the truth at face value. I do understand that. But again, like I said, there is truth at the end of the day with anything. It is what it is. Rankin County, on January 24th of 2023, six white former law officers, some of whom called themselves the Goon Squad. I know, doesn't that sound nice? In 2023, went into a home without a warrant and carried out a racially motivated attack on Michael Corey Jenkins and Eddie Terrell Parker. According to court documents, they planted drugs and guns afterwards to bury it under false charges. All six pled guilty. United States District Judge Tom Lee called the crimes egregious and despicable, and federal sentences ran to roughly 132 years combined. In September 24, the Justice Department opened a pattern or practice civil rights investigation into that sheriff's department. So yes, the question is earned, paid in full. But look hard at what those failures actually were. In Smith County, the failure was a sheriff who talked, who reached a public conclusion in about a day and then spent months defending it. In Rankin County, the failure was officers who wrote down a story that wasn't true. Neither one was silence. Both of them were certainty, arriving far too early. There's also a clock difference that nobody says out loud. Carter's family was stonewalled for more than 4 months before the sheriff walked anything back. Weeks into the Wells investigation, there's a records trail, an FBI referral, a joint evidence inspection, and a public call for footage. And the single moment in this case that most resembles the pattern people are afraid of is its own moment. Officials spoke early. Per CNN, when Nolan's body was found on July 6, local officials said it appeared to be an accidental drowning and that no foul play was suspected. Ledbetter told CNN that day that no foul play had been identified at that point. A drowning conclusion offered the same day before state autopsy, before toxicology, before the FBI touched the digital evidence. Maybe you should be a little less trigger happy on that one. Maybe you shouldn't be saying that out loud. Maybe you should learn from your mistakes or the mistakes of your colleagues and just shut the up. That Sharpton's legitimate hit, and it's a fair one, considering the context here. Everything since has been the opposite of the behavior, though. Should that have been said to begin with? No. Do people say stupid things? Yes. Are people stupid? Yes. But it doesn't mean that Nolan's friends are behind some conspiracy to kill their friend. It doesn't mean every piece of this case falls apart. Two of them hold weight. And the first one is the judge, because that threat has been left hanging by nearly everything and everybody covering this. Ashley Cole sits on the Chancery Board in Mississippi's District 16-2. Chancery Court in Mississippi is a court of equity, divorce and alimony, child custody, adoptions, wills and estates, guardianships, land titles and contracts. Jackson County's own Chancery Court page lists exactly that docket. Federal criminal cases aren't heard in Chancery Court. They go to circuit court. They're brought by a district attorney who is separately elected, investigated by a sheriff who is separately elected. And in this instance, the FBI is examining the digital evidence. It's like, oh, are you a police officer? I'm an officer. What? I'm a dog catcher. Oh, so you're not hard crimes investigator. I mean, it's not the same thing. It's not, doesn't even touch the same areas of law. So that's important. And look, there's plenty of cases where we find out there's a judge very close to things and we talk about it. This isn't that. It's not that. It just isn't that. If it was, trust me, we'd be all over it. So the version of this where a judge quietly steers a death investigation away from her son runs straight into a jurisdictional wall. There's no criminal docket for her to steer it onto. That's checkable, and it checks out. None of which means her conduct is a non-issue. The petition to the Mississippi Commission on Judicial Performance isn't about jurisdiction at all. It's about a sitting judge publicly commenting on an active death investigation while identifying herself as a judge, and whether doing that damages public confidence in the courts. Might be wise just to not say that out loud right now. That's a legitimate complaint. It also is a completely different complaint from the one being made online, and it will be decided by people whose job it is to decide. Then there's that document. Mississippi Code Section 416165 says a copy of the autopsy report shall be furnished to one adult member of the descendant's or the deceased immediate family or to their legal representative upon request. That's the text of the statute. Whether the district attorney's position squares with that entitlement is a fair question to put to her. And it's a completely different question from whether the press gets a copy. But there is someone who has a copy outside of law enforcement, very likely today. Why we haven't heard what's in that, I do not know the answer to that question. I don't know if there's an order of you can see it, but you can't publicly disclose this until there's a grand jury. There might be. I don't know. I do not know. A lot of speculation there. Could have been whatever the information is. Maybe there's a reason to share it. Maybe there's not. Again, I don't know. I'm not going to go down a road of saying I do. And here's why. Because I don't. We'll find out. On the public side, she's standing on solid ground. Sections 256112 makes investigative reports held by law enforcement exempt from the Public Records Act and leaves any release to the agency's discretion. McLarth also cited Mississippi's rules of professional conduct, which bar her from publicly discussing evidence during an active investigation. But push on the reason she gave. She said releasing details early could influence witnesses. Roughly 60 witnesses have already been interviewed. The friends' accounts are already in Rolling Stone, on ABC News, on TMZ, on a podcast. Shielding witnesses from information they handed out themselves is a neat trick. The contamination argument is thinnest exactly where she's leaning onto it hardest. And somebody outright or ought to say that out loud to her face. Her grand jury explanation does hold up as stated practice. She said every death in the county except natural causes and non-criminal car wrecks goes to a grand jury, and that death investigations have been handled that way her entire career. A grand jury looking at death doesn't mean charges are coming. It also doesn't mean there aren't any either. What she hasn't said is when. Reuters reported that her office didn't answer questions about when jurors would be convened or what evidence they would see. So the public gets a seated report, a sealed report, an unscheduled proceeding and toxicology results that also haven't come back. That's a lot of weight resting on a calendar nobody will show you. And here's a piece almost nobody's mentioned. McLarth agreed to a joint inspection of Nolan's recovered phone with the family's own experts. University of Mississippi law professor Ronald Wright, Reichlach told the Associated Press that mutual inspection of evidence between police and a victim's family is not typical. Evidence gets secured, it doesn't get shared. So the office accused of hiding evidence agreed to examine a piece of it alongside the people doing it accusing. That's not how a cover-up spends its afternoon. This is genuinely hard, and decent people are landing in different places on it for decent reasons. Weeks in a careful investigation and a slow burial look identical from the outside. Both of them are quiet. Both of them say pending. Both of them ask you to wait, and neither one hands you a reason to believe the waiting ends somewhere good. What separates them isn't tone. It's three things a person can actually check. Does the withholding have a rule behind it? Is the record growing while nothing is being announced? And are the people asking questions getting access or getting doors shut in their faces? On all three, this doesn't sound like Smith County. There's still a bill outstanding, an official cause and manner of death. Whatever a grand jury does with it, and a straight answer on what that statute entitles Nolan's family to receive and when. There's also a symmetry here that's uncomfortable no matter which side of it you stand on. A family is demanding verification from the state. The state's critics have been circulating claims that don't survive verification. Both of these things are true at the same time. Neither one cancels either one out. Thousands of people were on the sand on that island on the 4th of July. Boats anchored for miles. A kid was supposed to be back on the football field, walked into that crowd, and the boat that carried him out there, pulled away at 4:31 without him. Whether anyone ever learns what happened in those hours depends on whether the quiet is work or whether the quiet is a wall. On the record so far, it looks like work. And the people refusing to take that on faith, the ones filling in records requests and asking about the statute and demanding the report, are a very large part of the reason it's going to stay work, because questions need to be answered. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue it right there. Links are in the description. Again, we just don't know. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.